Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. It's me, Joe, your casual comics guy, here today with my friend Jeff. How are you doing today, Jeff?
Hi, everybody. My voice is a little lower today. I'm good.
Dropped, huh?
I'm thank you. Yeah, they finally, yes. Okay.
Congratulations.
No, I've been sick for a long, long, long time.
You weren't sounding so good last time. You know, it's been a while since we recorded because between you and then I had a bad cough the last few days. It's like finally getting to the end of this winter weather here in Omaha. I'm hoping that things will start to clear up. Things are looking up for me now.
They're starting to. And you know what I found out today? I found out why I'm coughing all the time.
Yes.
Acid reflux.
Oh,
Who knew? It goes up. It goes down into the lungs a little bit and just irritates everything and makes me cough all the time.
All right. Well,
I found out by accident and I couldn't be happier that I finally know what the heck is going on.
That's good. Well, congratulations. So, I'm like this podcast is turning into me listening to my parents talk about their health issues. So we should get on to the comic book business today. We're here.
I got the acid reflux pretty bad. Oh God, my bunions.
Comic book news, happiness, fun.
Comic books. We are going to cover Batman One Bad Day, the series.
One Bad Day.
But before we get to Batman One Bad Day, it is about a week out from the new Shazam Fury of the Gods movie.
Yes, that's how it's pronounced.
That's how I choose to pronounce it now. Shazam Fury of the Gods, starring Zachary Levi and I don't know who else.
Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren. Yeah. Right. She's the main bad guy.
Okay. So we both liked Shazam, the first movie. You have been a big Red Cheese fan for a long time.
Since early childhood.
So you've seen the trailers. All the trailers are out. The movie's coming in, 9 days as we record this? Probably by the time it's posted. It'll be like 3 weeks after the movie's played by the time we post this. No, I'm going to post it sooner. Actually, we'll probably post this when we're posting it. It'll probably be right when it's coming out. So what are you excited for, Jeff, on Shazam Fury of the Gods?
We are like you said, about 9-10 days away from release, and so the media embargo is lifted today. Ooh. And early reviews are very, very positive, so
just in time for it to all get swept out of the of the new DC universe.
Well, maybe not. You know, if this performs well, Zachary Levi has a pretty good relationship with Peter Safran, so that character might be a holdover. You never know.
I hope so.
I hope so too, because he's so much fun.
It still makes no sense to me that they had a Black Adam standalone movie that had nothing to do with Shazam, and it seems like they're not going to. Unless they pull something out of left field, there's not going to be any references to Black Adam in this movie.
I would seriously doubt it. And that all comes down to, I hate to say this, but it all comes down to the hubris of The Rock. Mm. He thought he was going to come in and take over DC and there's a new hierarchy of power. I guess that didn't work out too good for you there, because your movie needed about 3 or 4 more rewrites before you went and filmed it, to get rid of the fourth act that was unnecessary and make it a coherent, whatever. Not a big fan of the Black Adam movie. It could have been and should have been a lot better.
So what can you tell me heading into the movie? Because I'm familiar with the character. I saw the first Shazam movie. I read some Shazam comics growing up. Mm-hmm. I watched Shazam on Saturday mornings with Isis.
The
Mighty Power Hour.
Heck yeah.
You knew at the end of the last Shazam movie who that little caterpillar dude was, and I didn't know.
Yes, Mr. Mind.
Is he going to have anything to do with this movie?
I haven't heard one word about him showing up, but I hope he does. I hope so, because he's such a fun, ridiculous character.
That's what I always thought about Captain Marvel or Shazam in reading the comics, is just how ridiculous. Like there's a talking tiger dude
Mm-hmm.
And
Mr. Like, Tawny.
There was just like that level of zaniness is what I hope exists in that movie. I haven't seen it in the trailers I've seen so far, but mm-hmm. who are the bad guys in this movie? Are they taken from the comics?
I don't think they are. I believe they were created for the film, but they're, you know, they're from the pantheon of gods, and I think they're like Atlas's family, and they're very upset that Shazam has stolen the power of the gods.
But he didn't steal it.
Out to get, well, he didn't. It was gifted to him by the wizard Shazam.
But so shouldn't maybe, they be mad at the wizard Shazam?
Well, which Shazam are you going to get mad at? This Shazam sounds, or Shazam?
It all sounds very much like people going to the British Museum to try to get their artifacts back that the Brits stole in the 1600s. They're like, no, I know this belongs to you and to your country because there's a label right there that says it, but it's ours now.
Yeah, it's to the victor.
Could he give back? Do you think he could give back just one of the powers?
You know, I don't know. In a, you know, a made up universe, writers can do whatever they want. So sure, of course he could.
Because his strength is the strength of Atlas, right? What are the Shazam letters?
Oh, you're gonna Solomon, make me go. Solomon, Hercules, Atlas, Zeus. Did I say Atlas already?
You did.
Then Achilles is the other one, and Mercury.
What? There aren't Atlas and Hercules kind of redundant? I mean, you could be like, sure, you take the Atlas part. I still got Hercules.
Well, okay, it's the wisdom of Solomon, the whatever. I don't know. I can't think of it off the top of my head.
You were right, though. I looked it up. Solomon, wisdom, Hercules, strength, Atlas, stamina.
Ah, there we go.
Zeus, power, Achilles, courage, and Mercury, speed. But if you got all that, I mean, I guess it's so that, like, when you're running around punching things with your super strength and your mighty speed, you don't get tired.
Right.
You're like, man.
He can do this all day.
I'm going to get winded if I'm out there flying around punching bad guys. Okay, well, so
you and I would, sure.
So they want his stamina back from him.
Well, I guess that's the power that they're looking to get back. Maybe it's the power of all the gods they're you know representing. And
no, I think I heard something similar. It's like the daughters of Atlas are sort of like the villains in this. They want their powers back, which he's now also shared with like six other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll see how that goes. You'd probably think to yourself, I can't, not that I don't want to give this one back because I could probably live with just the other ones, but now I'm setting a precedent. And now if anybody else comes and asks for those ones back, I got to give those back too.
Right. Yeah. The Flash shows up. Hey, you know about that whole Speed of Mercury thing? Yeah, we're going to need that back. The Speed Force is asking for it.
I guess I won't overthink it. The last movie was dumb fun. I won't overthink it until after I see it.
Yeah, it's meant to be a family friendly superhero film, so don't expect Shakespeare out of it. Just go and get your popcorn and have a great time.
I will do that. You've convinced me, Jeff. I will go and I'll have my popcorn, which you never do when we go to the movie. You never have popcorn.
No, I rarely ever eat popcorn because of dietary restrictions and stuff like that. So,
all right.
I am your parents.
All right. I still like you anyway.
Oh, I love it. Believe me. I smell it. And I'm like, oh, I want to eat all that popcorn.
Should I not order popcorn? Is it
you do every time.
But should I not? Is it like too much?
No. Oh no.
You can smell it.
No, nobody should ever modify their food things because of me. Don't worry about it.
I used to work with somebody, I'm not gonna name any names, but she said she had food allergies. I only say she said she had it, not because I don't believe food allergies are real, but because I had witnessed moments in time where she would order something she said she had an allergy to and say she found out that she didn't after all. But I guess those things come and go, so I'm not going to knock it. But anyway, she had food allergies, so we would go to places and there were many things she could not order.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad. That's great. She was very obnoxious about it, in which she would bring her own food and go back and talk to the chefs in the kitchen. I get it, man. Maybe mix in eating a meal at home, if that's how it is for you. But when, we, when we would go out, the thing was, she would always see what you ordered and she would be like, oh my gosh, that looks amazing. I can't eat it, but can I smell it?
Oh yeah.
And she would want to put her nose right down next to your food and get a big whiff of it.
No, I don't like that at all.
I didn't care for much either, but if you ever want to smell my popcorn, Jeff, you can.
Wow. Gosh, thanks.
We've known each other that long. That's
what a comfortable pal.
Smelling each other's popcorn. That's a new level. All right.
Well, no, I'm not going to go there. There's something I was going to say, but I'm not going to say it.
There's nothing more to say from that. So we, having said there's nothing more to say, we will just take a quick break. And when we get back, we will talk to you all about the series Batman One Bad Day.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Support your police. That's our message.
All it takes is one bad day to reduce the sanest man alive to lunacy. That's how far the world is from where I am. Just one bad day.
Those immortal words were spoken by the Joker in 1988's classic Batman one-shot, The Killing Joke. Now, Batman fans can experience new tales of classic Batman villains as each one of them relives their own
one bad day.
What twists a promising schoolboy into a vengeful villain?
One bad day.
What prompts an innocent young woman to take up a life of larceny?
One bad day.
What incites an actor to launch a killing spree in L.A.?
One bad day.
DC's latest series of 64-page one-shots is here. Don't miss them unless you want to risk having your own.
One bad day.
All right, everybody. That's One Bad Day for DC Comics. It's an 8-issue series, 8 one-shots, each featuring a Batman villain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based off of it comes out of The Killing Joke, at least the quote from The Killing Joke, which was a seminal Batman comic from, we looked it up. What was it? 1987, 1989?
89 sounds more like it.
Okay. Written by Grant, gosh, now I'm blanking everything. Is it written by Grant Morrison? I believe it was.
Maybe you're the comic book guy. You tell me.
I know, but all of a sudden I had Chinese food for dinner, and I'm getting a little hungry again already.
Yeah.
So Batman Killing Joke was a one shot, and it was one of those that it changed the landscape of comics. And you read it. I read it when it first came out. You read it not too long. We talked about this. It was, you said you were very adjacent to it. Wasn't out that long when you read it. Oh, Alan Moore was the writer.
Alan Moore, yeah.
Alan Moore, 1988. Split the difference. I said 87, 89. It was right in the middle of 88. Go figure. Written by Alan Moore. And it sort of transformed the way people thought about Batman and the Joker. Mm-hmm. And you read it back in the day, you know, your favorite, I think your favorite Batman is still the Adam West Batmans, which I don't blame you.
Well, those are the sentimental favorite. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'll tell you, I can even go back to the Christopher Nolan Batman films. And if you like, watch the Christopher Nolan Batman, pick a Christopher Nolan Batman movie, even the best one, watch that 3 times in a row. Or watch 6 hours of Adam West Batman. I'll watch 6 hours of Adam West Batman.
Oh, easily. Easily. It's more fun.
This is right around the time that Frank Miller was, you know, Dark Knight, Killing mm-hmm. Joke. Mm-hmm. Alan Moore's like, I'm gonna take this up a notch.
Yeah.
In the content and bringing it into more violent adult fare.
Yeah, and doing a real character study of who the Joker is and why he's motivated to do and be what he is, which really hadn't been done that seriously before. And it took some chances, and it forever changed certain people in the DC universe.
Right. So you get a different origin of the Joker than I think you had seen before. And you start to see how Batman really was intertwined with the Joker sort of from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you can spoil a comic that's that old, but it is the premise of the book is anybody could be the Joker. You're just one bad day away from totally cracking under the pressure and doing horrible things,
mm-hmm.
which is a message for 1988 that, like, especially for teenagers, you're like, oh yeah, that's deep. That is deep. You know, you can look around the whole world and say, look at all the crap that's going on. And everybody thinks they're better than that, but you're one bad day away from that being you.
Yeah. I wonder how much the Michael Douglas movie Falling Down influenced the concept for this story, because that's pretty much the same thing.
I imagine Alan Moore sitting in a movie theater with his, with his, like, rings on and his giant beard and his druidic shamanic totems everywhere, watching One Bad Day in the Cineplex. Or not One Bad Day, but watching Falling Down.
Yeah,
in the Cineplex. That would be amazing. But it was, I think there was something in the zeitgeist at that time, mm-hmm. that was making people feel like, hey, everybody's one bad day away from breaking down and cracking. And he does. The guy, and I don't remember his name in the book, but he goes by the Red Hood. He's like, he's trying to do something that isn't, like, he's a petty criminal that he's trying to do it for. If I remember right, it's even for decent reasons. He's not like a bad guy. He just needs some money.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a stand-up comedian who's not very successful, and he's finds out that his wife is pregnant, and he's trying to provide for his family any way he can.
Right. And not quite Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker, but
no,
still very dark. And the Joker is trying to prove to Batman, you're kind of just one bad day away too. And so he goes to some extremes, in which the character of Batgirl at the time through comics had been Barbara Gordon. This is why, mm-hmm. Barbara Gordon is now always portrayed as Oracle in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. Because of this story.
Yes. In order to try to break down Commissioner Gordon and Batman mentally, the Joker literally kidnaps Barbara Gordon and shoots her in the spine, paralyzing her.
Mm-hmm. Point blank.
Yeah. So that's the one bad day that is leading into these character studies now from the Killing Joke.
Mm-hmm.
It was some kind of inspiration to be like, okay, let's take a look at other Batman villains through these series of one shots. And they're kind of long. They're like 64 pages.
Yeah. They're a bit of a slog. Not going to lie.
It's sort of like, they're like, how do we take each one of these of the Rogues Gallery and reconnect them to audiences in a new way? It had me excited to read it, because they should be continuity light. You should be able to maybe figure out something different about the villains themselves. So the entire series consists of Batman One Bad Day, the Riddler, Two-Face, the Penguin, Mr. Freeze, Bane, Catwoman, and Clayface. Oh, and Ra's al Ghul. Everybody says that name differently. How do you say it, Jeff? Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul. Tomato, tomato. I can't hear you if you're talking.
That's because my mute was on.
Hey.
I had to cough. I mean, I say it Ra's al Ghul, but Ra's everybody Agul. Else, yeah. And is it Mr. Mitzia's Pidlick? Is it Mixiplick? Who knows?
Nobody knows. Is it Shazam? Is it Shazam?
It could be Shazam.
Who's to say?
Well, not me, because I'm a pretty much cringe every time you say Shazam.
I like it. That's why I say it. It's like when I go and I see chamomile tea and I want to say chamomile. Shazam. But regardless, you've got, I'm trying to keep us on topic because I don't want this to drag out forever like I can do sometimes. But that's the books. And we've decided when I pitched this to you, Jeff, I said, let's just pick three of them. Mm-hmm. We picked Mr. Freeze. We picked the Riddler.
Mm-hmm.
And we picked Bane.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about each of these three books one at a time when we come back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Let's go, but inconspicuously, through the window. Save your sympathies, Robin. In the midst of a heated debate as to whether any of Gotham's villains can be redeemed, Mr. Freeze is the most likely of the bunch to repent. But in the middle of the iciest winter on record, any chances of setting Victor Freeze on the right path hinge on a deeper understanding of Freeze's
one bad day.
All right, everybody, welcome back to our One Bad Day special. I'm not having a bad day, though. I'm having a pretty good day. Maybe it's because I was saving up my one bad day for this evening, Jeff.
Save all those bad vibes for the podcast.
Yeah. So we're going to kick off with Mr. Freeze. And this is a 64-page book, like we said, to give people maybe a different take on the Mr. Freeze that you may know. And what's sort of your touchstone for Mr. Freeze, Jeff, of that character?
It's certainly not the Batman animated series, which is the most popular and actually the kind of the definitive version of the Mr. Freeze and the origin story. My Mr. Freeze comes from the three different actors who portrayed him on the old Batman Adam West TV series. And in the comics prior to that, he was Mr. Zero. I think that was his name. And then they changed
Mr. Cold Miser.
I think he was Mr. Zero in the comics first. And then when they came to TV, they changed it to Mr. Freeze. Then there's that god-awful abomination in the 80s with Arnold Schwarzenegger that we just kind of don't talk about.
We're going to, because you love it.
But the animated series, which, like I said, is kind of the definitive version of the character.
I think the for people who know the character and who are interested in the character, you're right. I mean, because the Batman the Animated Series was amazing. That's one that people always remember because they do portray Freeze at least as a bit more of a sympathetic character in that the reason he is Mr. Freeze is because he has had an accident in trying to save his wife who is dying. And he is a scientist who has studied a lot about cold. And so he is trying to lower her body temperature to be able to keep her in a state of suspended animation until they can find a cure for her disease. And then through an accident, he becomes Mr. Freeze, which that's kind of how it happens with Arnold Schwarzenegger too, right?
Yes. The story there is not very different at all.
Not nearly as eloquently told, but.
Well, no. No, it's Arnold. What are you going to do?
Come on, Jeff. Give me one Arnold Schwarzenegger Mr. Freeze line.
All right, everybody, chill.
Yes.
Oh, that was horrible.
That movie's it is the so bad it's good.
Listen well to my name, for it is the chilling sound of your doom.
So that's what people who know about Mr. Freeze know about Mr. Freeze. And so it's sort of like, what can this book do to tell you a different that story through a different lens? And so in this book, you've got Batman and Robin, and Batman trying to, they're having a little bit of a discourse or debate as much as Batman ever will debate Robin. And this is the Dick Grayson Robin, right?
Yes.
This is the Goody Two Shoes Robin compared to all the other Robins that we've seen since then. I mean, we've seen
the most
pure
Robin.
And Robin thinks, hey, there's you know, we're fighting these villains and they've got to be able to be redeemed. And Batman doesn't believe that any of them are redeemable, except possibly Victor Freeze, which that is an amazing, stunning coincidence that his name is Victor Freeze. And then he became a bad guy who was cold powered named Mr. Freeze. Well, F-R-I-E-S, I guess.
Yes.
Maybe it's Victor Fries. Like Shazam.
He could have become a potato based supervillain. We don't know.
But so this is a bit of a redemption story, and that they're going to try and get in touch with Mr. Freeze, how you do get in touch with him, which is trying to stop him in the middle of a heist and offer him a chance at redemption. Yeah. And so there is this moment where there's an armored truck, and the armored truck is this Batman goes undercover. First off, I forgot all about Matchstick Malone.
Which
is Batman. Batman has a secret identity that, like, Bruce Wayne is Batman, who is now playing Matches Malone, a two-bit thug, so he can stay connected to the criminal underworld.
Right.
And his cover story is that he has stolen what he thought was a truck with valuable cargo, and it turns out it's like what is it, like liquid nitrogen or something like that.
Yes, and he's trying to offload it.
You know anybody who needs a bunch of liquid nitrogen? And so that is going to be the lure to get Mr. Freeze's attention. Mm-hmm. And that they do. And they get the attention of Mr. Freeze as well as his sidekick, Frostbite.
Yeah. It's kind of a blink and you miss it cameo from Frostbite.
And I went down a rabbit hole on Frostbite big time. Because I was like, is this a new character that they've created? Or is this a character that appeared somewhere else? And so first I found Frostbite that I showed you a picture of that Frostbite. That was definitely not the Frostbite in this. Because the Frostbite in this is a younger female sidekick. That Frostbite looked to be...
Sidekick?
I don't know.
Or side piece. I think there's a relationship going on there.
There could be, although he's still pining for his ex-wife or for his wife who is in suspended animation. There could be. It seems like there's something going on there between the two of them. The Frostbite I found was a blue dude who looked like no matter how cold it was, would not put on a shirt, had amazing abs and pierced nipples. I'm like,
wow,
that's not. And then Jeff, I found this Frostbite, which was from Superman, A Tale of Five Cities. And it is a large prestige format, 48-page graphic novel published by Danish publisher Interpressa in 1990. Superman og Freds Bollmann. Translation, Superman and the Peace Bomb. And I just got to run through. This is like a wild tangent, but here's this book. It's like, the U.S. government has developed an invention that can render harmless all nuclear weapons, but wishes to keep it for themselves. The peace activist Theodore P. Wyatt has traveled to Europe with the Daily Planet reporters Lois Lane and Clark Kent to tell the rest of the world about Peacemonger. Like, I am now fascinated with this book, the first and still only Superman graphic novel produced outside the U.S. with DC's permission and agreement, and was never published in English. And it has, this is his... another, there is the character of Frostbite in this book too.
Okay.
Anyway, it's not the Frostbite from G.I. Joe. It's not the Frostbite from Marvel Comics. It's not the Frostbite who is the, I thought there was one that was listed that was sort of the sidekick to Ice, who is another cold-based hero in the DC universe, but I can find no other reference to the Frostbite that's in this book. But I don't know. Interesting character. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's what I know about that. Did I take us too far off topic? Let's bring it back.
It's a little tangent, but that's okay.
So the rest of the book plays out, and you know, I don't know, what did you think about there was a redemption arc for Victor Freeze in this, but not the one I think people expect.
You're gonna have to help me out with this, because
he turns out to be not that great of a guy. It turns out in the book that he was keeping his wife alive, but also was kind of a jerk to her while he was alive, and while she while she was alive, and she was dying, and he had been fairly neglectful of her when she was healthy. Like, she was always just going out with her friends and hanging out, and he didn't like that, even though he was consumed with his work, extremely jealous. And then when she got to the hospital, refused to let her friends see her in the
hospital. That's right.
Because he wanted her, he was very possessive of her, and he wanted her all to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so even on her deathbed, he was denying her friends access to see her. And so what we had assumed from Arnold Schwarzenegger's touching portrayal of Mr. Freeze, as well as Batman the Animated Series, of a story of true love, this seemed to be more of a tale of obsession and
possession. And dysfunctional relationship,
right? Mm-hmm. And so when she finally gets frozen, it's kind of interesting, because you mentioned about Frostbite, it seems like he's kind of hanging out with this Frostbite now, and he's got his wife over here, and he's kind of happy that his wife is frozen, because now she's all his.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not really working his ass off to try and cure her at this point.
No, he's kind of living in his little power structure that he set up.
Yeah, and Batman and Robin give him a lab with the means to work on the cure, and he gets very frustrated because he can't get the cure. And then he just kind of stays an a-hole at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't cure her. He doesn't stop his... So Batman winds up locking him up. But he does give away his research that he did on this
mm-hmm.
to Robin in what they call like an open source technology mm-hmm. that can keep vaccines cold long enough to ship around the world. And he gives it to them for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some way, even though like his personal stuff has failed, he has gifted the world this thing anonymously through the Wayne Foundation to make the world a better place through what he invented to try and keep his wife on ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Story you expect.
It's a yin and yang. In all evil, there's a little good.
So what was your take on this comic? Like it? Love it? Pass.
Like it. Like okay. it, I think. It was a good story, well told.
I thought the art in this one was pretty good.
Yeah, the art was very good in this one, unlike another one that we'll talk about here in a little bit. It's very accessible from a visual standpoint, from a story standpoint, and you do get a bit of a redemption at the end, which is kind of nice, and Robin's theory ends up playing out to be true.
And you get a whole story that you don't have to know about Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yep, it's self-contained.
You don't have to know any mm-hmm. DC continuity at all. There's no like, oh, I didn't understand this because I don't know who that character is. I thought, like I said, I went down the rabbit hole on Frostbite because I'm like, just because I did. I don't know why. I at first I'm like, this is obviously a character they made up just for the story. You don't have to know anything about him. It's not integral. And then I looked up Frostbite and I was like, whoa, who's that dude? Mm-hmm. I went down the wiki wormhole. but no, I thought it's a good solid book. And if you're a Batman fan and you're if you're curious about it all, the character of Mr. Freeze and Batman, it's worth picking up in that, you won't be confused. You'll get a well-told story with really clean art, mm-hmm. Nice color popping off the pages. It's a satisfying comic reading experience.
Yeah, it's everything you expect from a comic book. It's not challenging you, it's entertaining you with a nice story.
Right. It's not Killing Joke depressing you for the remainder of your youth.
That's right.
So with that, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk Batman One Bad Day, The Riddler.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. They may be drinkers, but they're still human beings. Edward Nygma's meticulous rules and systems go out the window when he kills seemingly at random. But Batman isn't buying it. This tense intellectual thriller sees Batman unravel as he tries to decode the Riddler's motivation. And to put an end to this crime spree, Batman will have to pinpoint the Riddler's
one bad day.
Why don't you, come on, Jeff. I always do the welcome back. Give everybody a welcome back in the style of the Batman Riddler, Frank Gorshin.
Welcome back, Batman. There, how about that?
I love it. That's great. That gets the juices flowing for us to talk about Batman One Bad Day, the Riddler. And so I have to even ask who your favorite Riddler is? I mean, there's not that many portrayals. I guess there's more than there used to be portrayals of the Riddler in media.
I like Frank Gorshin, obviously. John Astin played him for one episode at one point in like season two. Not a fan of that one. I love Jim Carrey's portrayal of the Riddler. I really love Paul Dano's version in the most recent Batman film.
It's interesting because that's a character that has taken, as I think a lot of Batman characters have, now that I'm thinking about it, over time, a lot of turns, in that a lot of them were created in the golden age of comics that were very silly. Mm-hmm. The Riddler never seemed to be a very threatening villain back in the day, unless
he was a gimmick,
right? He was gonna, write a riddle and a sky plane. And the question always is, why is he creating these riddles that are just going to get him caught? Why not just do the crime, dude?
Right.
Just do
exactly.
It.
Why are you warning them?
I don't know. I assume the Joker came first, and they're like, haha, people like the Joker. Now, how about a Riddler?
That's too? Pretty much exactly how it happened. Yeah.
Hey, I was right about that. I'm my assumptions for once. So the Riddler's been an interesting character because he was never really that threatening. I really like the when we read Wrong Earth, and they had a parallel version of the Riddler who was doing exactly what I think Riddler stuff is like putting them in a giant tea kettle and waiting for the water to boil.
Yeah, and giving them a riddle that will let them escape, but only if they solve it in time.
Right. And Batman always, he knows him. And then that character did evolve over time until the point where you get to Paul Dano, where it's very almost like the movie Seven, where if you think of the movie Seven, that's what he's doing, is he's laying out a trail of clues because he's trying to make a bigger point. And he understands that if I give you the clues and let you discover yourself what I have discovered for myself, it will make a bigger point, and it will prove to you that I am right about a lot of things and that you should be on my side. So fascinating that character's evolved over time. And then this one, written by Tom King, takes that, I think, even a step further than the Batman movie, with Paul Dano's characterization of the Riddler. It's not the same portrayal at all. It is very much the dude in the green suit with the green derby with the question marks. But much more threatening and back down to earth. And Tom King is a writer we've talked about a long time that I really like when he does DC Universe stuff that's out of continuity, because he comes up with interesting, clever things to do with characters that usually he can find a way to adapt a genre. Like Human Target became very much a 60s hard-nosed detective gumshoe type thing that I liked a lot. And in this one, he takes the Riddler in a little different direction.
Yeah, I'll say he does. My gosh. he takes the Riddler and basically I think what we're getting here is a Riddler who's fed up. He's sick and tired of the same old cat and mouse with Batman, and it's like, you know what? I'm done with all this. You leave me alone from now on. Just hands off. You don't touch me anymore. And the way he goes about it is very unexpected.
Yeah, and I don't know that they give much reason other than he understands that he has always been smarter than Batman and has been playing a cat and mouse with him. And he's just sort of done with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they explain why, but this is the one that seems to stick most closely to that one bad day concept, because we get to see his origin growing up. And while it's not necessarily a single moment, although maybe, you know, now that we're talking about it, maybe it is. I don't know. Because he goes back to see his mother at one point in the comic book. But mm-hmm. you get to see how he grew up with his mother and his father, and how he thought Riddle, he was a straight A student in a British, seemed like a British boarding school to me.
It felt like it was, but I don't think it was.
It seemed like his father was very headmaster-ish,
mm-hmm.
and expected his son was a genius, was brilliant, and should do everything. And he had a teacher who was putting a riddle at the end of each test.
Yes.
Which he thought was very unfair, because he learned all of the material mm-hmm. and studied and knew everything, and the teacher wanted to encourage lateral thinking by asking a riddle that sort of made no sense a lot of times.
And it was preventing him from getting a perfect score, and his father was very displeased with that.
And he would go in and he pled with the teacher. He's like, I understand if you want to make this extra credit, but this is not fair. This is not material we should cover. And he snaps.
Mm-hmm. Boy, does he ever.
Right? And that's what compels him to become the Riddler, is just this awful buildup over time of the pressure that he has from his father, because he is a genius, and how he feels that this is unfair, and he's getting physically and mentally punished by his father for the
harsh.
And he breaks, and then at some point when this story starts, he breaks again, and he just randomly murders somebody, and he doesn't leave a riddle, and he just stands there and he waits for Batman to show up.
Yeah.
And he's like, listen, here's the deal. Arkham can't hold me. The police can't hold me, which he proves in a brutal way later,
mm-hmm.
because he knows everybody's secrets and he's connected. And he's like, basically anybody who makes a move against him, he has secrets. He knows where their family is. He knows how to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Batman, you have a code. You're not going to kill me. And if you ever prevent me from doing what I want to do ever again, I will find another random person and kill them. And every time I will do that, you will have a human life on your hands, because I will randomly kill people. Mm-hmm. I've shown you that I can do it.
Yeah. Which is a departure from the Riddler. Riddler was never a terribly violent guy. I mean, it was all more schemes and things. And there was some violence, but he wasn't like a cold-blooded killer like Joker.
Right.
And in this book, bam, all the gloves are off. He doesn't care.
Was Joker really ever a cold-blooded killer before killing Joke?
Oh, yeah, sure. He'd just as soon kill you as look at you.
Really?
Yeah, he was always psychotic in that way.
I thought that was a new thing in the 90s.
More so in the 90s, but he's pretty much always been that way.
I'm not
gonna not back in the Dick Sprang 50s stuff, but you know, the modern era Joker has always been that way.
Yeah. So to me, this really was the most of a one bad day story,
mm-hmm. right?
And the Riddler, absolutely. The Riddler breaks Batman down, and this becomes almost Batman's one bad day.
Yeah, it really does.
So do you want to?
What can he do?
Should we give away the ending? Should we keep it spoiler free?
Nope, we should not give away the ending, because it's powerful.
Yeah. So I would definitely say, if you have any interest in Batman and want to see a very different take on the Riddler, especially if you liked the most recent The Batman starring Robert Pattinson, which I did. This is a book that's worth checking out, and it does. There are surprises all along the way.
Yeah.
Especially with, a real sort of gut punch of an ending.
Yep. And if you're an REM fan, you're in luck because Riddler looks exactly like Michael Stipe.
That did not click with me, but now that you say it, I absolutely see it.
That's all I could think the entire time I'm reading it. I was like, oh, Michael Stipe is playing the Riddler in this movie.
And I think he should. I actually think that would be brilliant if they ever adapt this. Or at least if they make this into an animated one-shot like they did The Killing Joke. They can get Michael Stipe to do some voice work or something.
Sure, why not?
All right, well, we're going to take one more quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about our last One Bad Day title, Bane.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. Decades from now, Bane is a washed-up wrestler reenacting his villainous past in the ring. But when he discovers that there's a new source of venom in the world, he'll do everything he can to make sure that no one takes the poison that ruined his life. But if Batman wants to truly help Bane clamp down on this evil once and for all, he's going to need to delve deeper into the villain's psyche and relive his
one bad day.
All right, and welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast. I'm not going to strain your vocal cords by asking you to do a Bane introduction to this segment.
Oh, it's very easy to do a Bane introduction.
You're Tom Hardy all of a sudden.
It was funny when we were picking these books because I had already read Batman One Dead Day, Bad Day the Penguin, and I had already read Two-Face and the Riddler. When mm-hmm. I proposed this, and I said, hey, let's read a couple. I recommended strongly, let's read Riddler, because I really like that one.
Yes, good choice.
And then I was like, what else do you want to read? And I was surprised when you picked Bane out of all mm-hmm. those possible titles. What was it that you were like, yeah, if we're going to read these, let's read Bane too?
Being the media guy, my only exposure to Bane has been in cartoons and movies, and I have yet to see a representation of this character that lives up to the reputation that he has, you know, among all my friends back in the 80s. They're like, oh, Bane, this guy's amazing. Oh, yeah. And no, he's been horrible in every media adaptation that I've ever seen. So I'm like, okay, I want to read a Bane comic and really learn who this guy is and what he's about, because I've heard he's awesome. Let's see it.
I'm interested to know why people thought he was so awesome. I remember back, and it feels like this followed on the heels of Death of Superman, where Superman basically got punched to death by a dude who's bigger and stronger than him. Mm-hmm. And that they did wonders for DC sales, probably caused the comic crash for a while. Because speculators all of a sudden started buying and paying massive amounts of money for comics, and they started printing way too many comics, and then the comic book stores, of course, caught in the middle, got stuck with the tab for overinflated comics market. Death of Superman, I'd be interested to reread, because I don't remember it being. I remember it being an event, but I don't remember it being that good of an event. Like I said, the bad guy is just a bad guy from outer space who happens to be able to punch harder and is stronger than Superman. And they just punch each other for 30 pages until Superman dies. Mm-hmm. But it was a massive success for DC. And then I feel like a couple years later, like, well, now we brought Superman back. What are we going to do? Like, Batman. Now let's do something bad to Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like part two of, well, I don't know, let's make this super roided out dude who's just stronger and tougher than Batman. And the it's like the crack heard around the world of when Bane breaks Batman's back and leaves him paralyzed, which then led to, like Death of Superman did, all these spinoff comics. And then eventually, you know, multiple people take the mantle of Batman. I actually think the way that that's reverberating probably most through the DC universe today, even more than Death of Superman did, is just the sheer number of bat adjacent characters who all will step in for Batman at a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm.
And all have very similar, they've all been trained by him or have worked with him at some point. So you've got a lot of the Bat family that I think springs out of this. But I always kind of felt like, even back then, I'm like, okay, Bane's just a big dude who gets super steroids, gets huge, and Batman can't punch him and beat him with, you know, physical power. I don't remember Bane in the comic being that smart, which is why it didn't ring true to me. Because I'm like, why would Batman just try and stand there and go toe-to-toe and punch this dude?
Yeah, but, no, he's smarter than that. He'd figure out his weakness and exploit it. And
which he did very quickly in the movie with Bane.
Which movie?
Which one was it? Was it
Batman
and Robin? The Bane was in.
Oh, God.
Which one was
that's
he in?
So painful. In for like... Batman and Robin. You're right. It was Batman and Robin. That was the one with Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy. Yeah. Bane's in it for like a total of like 2 minutes. And they just unplug his steroid supply from his head and he shrivels back down, I think, into a normal.
The single most wasted opportunity in a Batman movie ever was Bane in Batman and Robin. It was just a ridiculous parody of a character.
I think Bane is a ridiculous parody of a character in general. So it's funny because it sounds like you picked this out saying, you know what? I don't know what's attractive about Bane, and I'm waiting to see that good Bane story. And I've felt that way since the introduction of Bane, since day one. And so I didn't have high hopes for this book because I've seen Bane not only in the media, but in the comics. I'm like, I don't think he's that compelling of a character.
Yep. And that's what I learned in reading this book, is that maybe the movies actually got him right. He's kind of boring.
They kind of did. This book opens up with this of the books was the most confusing to me. I read it multiple times and I'm still not exactly sure what happened or why things happened.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a lot when I read stuff about Bane. I still have not even seen the last Christopher Nolan Batman movie because I'm just not that interested in Bane.
You really didn't miss anything at all. It was downhill after Heath Ledger. Everything was downhill.
Yeah, I'm not that interested in Bane stuff. So
yeah,
I loved the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. He's one of my favorite film directors, not only for his comic book stuff but for all of his non-comic stuff too.
Oh yeah, it's great movies.
But yeah, this book starts off with Bane being sort of, he has given up taking the venom, which is what they call the super steroid that he takes, this venom. And he's living on the Mexican wrestling circuit. And he dresses up night after night and wrestles a dude in a Batman outfit.
The semi-Batman outfit, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then in this one, for some reason, am I recalling this correctly? He like literally just does break the dude's back because he freaks out.
No, it's all an act. You're supposed to think that, oh my God, he actually freaked out and killed this guy. But then you see him, you know, backstage afterwards going, wow, it's really an honor being with you and I'm doing this. And yeah, so it was all staged.
Okay.
Like, sorry, spoiler alert, kids, most wrestling is.
So the story is a loose, I don't get where the One Bad Day tie-in is with this book.
I don't either. It doesn't make any sense because this is a redemption arc for Bane. It's a redemption story, but it doesn't really give you a whole lot of, I mean, it does touch on his origin and all of that stuff, but it's not really a character study of why he is the way he is. It's about why he doesn't want to be the way he is anymore.
Yeah, because the way he is he's just a destruction machine. He's given up venom and he realizes that it's wrecked his life. So he finds out that somebody is selling venom again.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to take it down.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing this. And then there's scenes of him and Batman working together to do that very same thing. And him and Batman have been working together for a long time to try and destroy the supply of venom.
Yep.
And then he meets, is it his creator, the dude who like invented it?
Yes. Who is also roided out on the stuff.
Yeah. I kind of almost like, I feel bad saying this. I know this is a casual comics cast and that means I'm only casually interested in certain types of comic books. And this one tested the casual nature of my fandom to the extreme, in that I could not have cared less.
Yeah.
From the setup of this book, it's a 64 page book. By the time I got to page 20, I'm like, it was a chore to finish the rest of this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would totally agree. I would totally agree. Riddler, fantastic. Mr. Freeze, pretty darn good. Bane, don't bother. Don't bother. It was so, it was tedious.
That is a good word for it. And the artwork was, I can get stylized, but even back in the day, it's just, and this is just a personal preference of mine, I like my characters and my artwork to be clean enough that you can comprehend the action.
Yes.
And that they remotely resemble the type of, like, if they're supposed to be a human, they should look roughly human-ish. I don't know if that's a me thing.
No, it's not. It's a me thing too. So yeah. Now the style of the art is interesting. It looks like it's, colored pencil, in a lot of places. It's kind of rough, sketchy artwork, but
there's a lot of little tiny panels too that, like,
yes.
And I know, like,
that one page that's just nothing but little micro thumbnail panels, and you cannot tell what the hell is going on.
And maybe that's the point, but I mean, I feel like I've read a lot of comics in my day and had artists want to tell stories in very different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It was a choice that didn't work.
No, it didn't work at all. Like I said, how do you get the flow of the story and the action through thumbnails? Because they were literally like a centimeter
big. It's like you would have to get a magnifying glass out to read them. And yeah. I did not care enough to examine it.
It's like, and I read it on the e-reader. I could, push my fingers apart and increase the size, and that still didn't help.
I feel like they were making me put more effort into read the book than I was willing to expend based on the story I had to that point.
Yeah.
So we can leave it at that, in that I think it's pretty resounding. Nobody, unless you were already a hardcore Bane fan that's looking for another Bane story, probably needs to read this book.
I would agree.
So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we can wrap up our One Bad Day podcast before it gets to be too much of a bad day of us talking about this Bane book. And so we'll take a quick couple minutes, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Underneath this garb, we're perfectly ordinary Americans.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We're here to wrap up our Batman One Bad Day podcast. So to run it down from the top, I think Jeff and I agree. Batman One Bad Day, the Riddler, excellent.
Yes.
Especially if you're a fan of the Batman, the recent movie, check that out. It's well worth a couple of reads. It's a great book. Batman, Mr. Freeze, good entertainment, is entertaining. Not necessarily the deepest story, but a quick, breezy read. If you're a fan of the character, if you just want to pick up a Batman comic because you haven't in a while, and you've got an itch for a Batman comic that's not too continuity deep, that you can just pick up, read, and set down. And then Bane, just, I don't know. I feel bad saying bad things, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
Fair enough.
So let's just talk about a couple things before we go. Is out of the books that are left, the ones we didn't cover. So to run it down again, here's all the books: the Riddler, Mr. Freeze, Bane we covered, Two-Face, the Penguin, Catwoman, Ra's al Ghul, and Clayface. Which one of those do you think you'd be most likely to read?
For the same reason that I wanted to read Bane, I would go with Clayface, because I want to know more.
Okay.
Or, Ra's al Ghul, I don't really know that character very well, but I don't really care about that character. So Clayface would be fun.
I've never cared about him. I only mildly cared about him more in the Batman movie. But Clayface actually has an interesting solicit, which is Clayface has always had dreams of stardom, so he heads out west to Hollywood to make his dreams come true under a new identity. However, when he finds out that the City of Angels is not much better than Gotham, he may return to his villainous ways. Doesn't seem like it's going to give you a bunch of his history, but seems like an interesting read. I did read most of the other ones. I liked Catwoman. Catwoman wasn't great. I think there's better Catwoman stories. Mm-hmm. I really like The Penguin. The Penguin is a fascinating story in that when the book starts, the Penguin has been reduced to nothing. He has been betrayed. He is no longer a crime kingpin in Gotham. And what he's got in his pocket is like $3 and a bullet. And he's like, I'm going to use these $3 and a bullet, and I'm going to reclaim my entire crime empire. And that was fascinating to me. Just because I never thought of him in that way. He always seemed like a goofy character, even though he owns this huge nightclub in Gotham and he is this crime kingpin. You don't realize probably how ruthless he had to be to get into that position.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you now, you see him in this book rebuild himself from nothing to that position again.
Well, that could be good.
It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So then my last question before we wrap, Jeff, is like, out of the entire pantheon of Batman villains, who would you actually like to them to do a One Bad Day book of that you'd be interested to read?
I would love nothing more than to make my way through 65 pages worth of backstory explaining the origin and motivation of Batmite.
That is exactly what I was going to say too. I like it. I would like to see what Batmite has going on under the hood.
I can't believe we picked the same one.
What makes that guy tick?
Yeah.
I want to see when he came from the fifth dimension, what the heck was going on there that made him feel like he's got to show up and pester Batman all the time.
Right. And why did he become fixated with Batman?
Right. I don't know. That's probably actually been explained. I did have a couple backups just in case. I was like, there is a chance that Jeff comes up with Batmite out of nowhere. But mine are also, like, if I was going to give you a serious answer, I'd actually wouldn't mind seeing, maybe behind the scenes of like Solomon Grundy. Like, if you could tell a really good Solomon Grundy story, sure. I think there's something there with that character I've always kind of liked. And then my other answer, if you were going to take Batmite, was Calendar Man.
Well, of course, I'm thinking of all the villains from the TV show. So my first instinct was, ooh, King Tut. Let's see what's up with him.
Well,
but then they kind of explain him on the TV show. So it's all been done anyway. So
when we were together, I told you Egghead.
Right. But, no, an excellent choice.
Great.
Although 65 pages might be excruciating.
Oh, I forgot you were going to give me your Vincent Price Egghead impersonation there. You got any more egg-based puns?
Anything? Oh, excuse me, Batman. Yeah, I do the Gilbert Gottfried's impression of Vincent Price. I do an impression of Gilbert Gottfried doing Vincent Price from the movie The Tingler. Scream for your lives.
I love
that movie. It's so bad.
It's the impression once removed.
Yeah. You can tell it's been filtered down a couple of times.
Like
a couple of generations lost there.
It's a copy of a copy.
Yep. Just like in the old VHS days.
Well, thanks for reading One Bad Day with me, Jeff. I know they weren't all great books, but hopefully at least the highs were high enough to make up for the lows.
Riddler made up for everything.
All right. Well, we will highly recommend that. By the time you hear from us again, we will have both seen Shazam, Fury of the Gods, and you'll get to hear our opinions on that, as well as whatever else is going on in the wild world of comics.
Shouldn't it be Shazam, Fury of the Goads?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's a short O, the way it's pronounced. Shazam or Shazam, you could make a case for either way in the pronunciation. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe it should be Shazam, Fury of the Gods. Put another R in there. But we'll be back to talk about that, as well as keep you entertained, hopefully, with some other comic book nonsense next time on the Casual Comics Cast. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, casualcomicsguide.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.